Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to this edition of In Depth with Stephen Strang. I try to probe and get to the bottom of the story, to pull out answers that will give my readers and my listeners insight into people who are significant. I ask them about how they got saved, how they received the baptism of the Holy Spirit, how they met their spouses. I try to dig down and get them to talk about things that are important, their successes, their failures, because even though these people are well known, even though they have their own media platforms, they don't often have an opportunity to talk about this side of their life. So I'm inviting you to tune in, to download, to listen, and to share In Depth with Stephen Strang. The Bible talks about the end times. You know, what is going to happen? Well, if you've been watching the news, you have to believe that it's culminating in something. And today we're going to talk with an author that's going to help us to decode the end times and even help us to understand who the Antichrist might be. Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to In Depth with Stephen Strang, my new once-a-week podcast, in which today I'm going to go in-depth with Pastor Mark Biltz, who has recently written the book Decoding the Antichrist in the End Times, What the Bible Says and What the Future Holds. I think it's a very interesting interview. I tracked him down and invited him to be on my podcast. And what I want you to do is listen to what he has to say. And at the end of the podcast, I'm going to tell you how you can get a free copy of this new book, which is just blowing up out there in the marketplace. I mean, we got a report recently that the initial sales, the early sales of this book are just significantly more than we had expected, indicating that there's a lot of interest in it. And also, he's been getting quite a bit of media play. So here's my interview.
Pastor Mark, you're probably best known about the blood moons. Could you explain to me exactly what is a blood moon and how did you become aware of this and the significance as it relates to the Bible and Bible prophecy?
Yes, a blood moon is simply a total lunar eclipse. And when the moon turns blood red, and I came across this while I was in my prayer closet clear back in 2008, and I noticed that there were total lunar eclipses on Passover and Tabernacles 2 years in a row. And so I did the research to see how often that happened and noticed the previous times was 67 when they recaptured Jerusalem, 48, 49 when Israel became a nation, you know. And so I just started noticing the pattern of all the events that happened in Jewish history. And so I, you know, thought, well, hey, people need to know what potentially could happen coming up in 2014, 2015.
That's right. And it was widely circulated. In fact, a lot of other ministries kind of picked up on this theme and, you know, did their own interpretation of it. And you have also written some things. Of course, I'm most excited about your latest book called Decoding the Antichrist and the End Times with the subtitle, What the Bible Says About What the Future Holds. And just full disclosure, I'm proud of this partly because I had the privilege of publishing it through Charisma House. In fact, you and I did a podcast before that the listeners may want to look up if they're interested in this. But I'm just interested in how this ministry has developed and what the Lord has showed you, and then I want to delve into a little bit about your background.
Sure. The ministry started back in 2001. LCDI has been going for about 18 years now, and we just really felt like we needed to reconnect to the Jewish roots to understand the culture of the Bible and the context. We really felt like we couldn't understand the New Testament unless we connected it to the Old Testament. And so I started it back in 2001, and almost immediately we started getting people from all over, different denominations, different ethnic groups started coming. Right now we have about 20 Russians and about 20 South Koreans and about 20 Hispanics. We got people from every denomination because we make the New Testament come alive when you reconnect it back to the Old Testament.
And you also have a huge congregation on the internet, don't you?
Yes. Yes, we probably have about 250,000 people who follow us on the internet. As a matter of fact, we live stream our services, and during any one service, we will have over 300 cities in 30 nations watching all at once.
Oh, it's amazing what technology allows us to do that wasn't possible just a few years ago. So you know, you're talking about all the different countries and the different ethnic groups. So this is a message that really resonates far and wide.
Exactly right, Steve. And that's what's amazing. I couldn't do this. This is why I know it has to be a God thing, to have all these different cultures, different countries wanting to come back to the original. And for me, it's pretty exciting.
Well, I'd like to drill down a little bit, maybe go in depth, and to find out about you, about your background, and sort of how you came to this awareness of how the New Testament ties into the Old Testament and into our Jewish roots. So let's start by where you were born and what was your family of origin like?
Sure, great question. I'm really an oddball. I was raised Catholic for 20 years, but what had happened, my ancestors were totally 100% Jewish on my father's side, basically. I have relatives who died in the Holocaust that are listed in Israel in Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum. But my great ancestor was a Jew married to a Jewish woman and got tired of being a poor Jewish tailor in France, where he ran off with a wealthy Catholic lady to America and had my grandpa. And then he ended up going back to France. And so my grandpa was raised Catholic, knowing that his dad was Jewish. So he raised my dad Catholic. And then my dad married a Protestant, but we still would do the Passover. I still have the Hebrew English Passover Seder in my house right here. So here I'm a Catholic dad, Protestant mom, remembering our Jewish roots, doing Passover. And so, you know, the first 20 years of my life, I was studying Catholicism, even went to the seminary. And then the next 20 years, I had gotten saved, and I jumped into Protestantism, the charismatic movement. And then the last 20 years, I've been looking at the Jewish roots of Christianity and how it connects. And so it's really a diverse life I've had.
Who were some of the influencers about the time you got saved as you got involved in the charismatic movement? Were there any teachers that may have influenced you, or were there books that influenced you?
Yes, both. I had joined a youth organization called the Agape Force that was centered in Sebastopol, California, and then moved to
Tony
Tyler.
Tony Salerno, I know him well.
Yes, yes, exactly. Tony Salerno was my mentor, along with Winky Pratney, along with Leonard Ravenhill. And then when we moved to Texas, Dave Wilkerson was my next door neighbor, and I played ping pong with him. So Gordon Olson. But anyway, so I had a lot of great mentors.
Well, you know, we've not talked about this before, but when I was 19, Winky had a huge, huge impact on me, as did Tony. It was a pivotal time in my life, so I can identify with you about that. So the Agape Force, I guess, doesn't really exist anymore. I was talking to Joy Dawson about it just a few days ago. But, you know, obviously you got involved with this. I don't think of Winky or Tony Salerno as really, I feel certain they would have agreed with you, but I don't know that they really taught on this. So was Derek Prince or any of those people an influence?
Yes. Yeah, I had a lot of different influences. But the biggest influence, believe it or not, was a book that my wife bought me back in 1994. She had gone to a bookstore, and she saw a book on the Jewish holy days written by a rabbi, Moshe Braun. And knowing that I'm Jewish on my father's side, and I love the Bible, she bought that book for me. And as you know, the Bible says we see through a glass darkly, we only know in part. Well, I'm reading Romans 11, and it says the Jews were only blinded in part. So they're not totally blind any more than we're totally blind. But I felt like the first group to humble themselves and look out of the other lens gets to see the clear picture. So I read that book, and it blew me away in what they were coming up with. And I tell people, I know how to eat chicken. I can eat the meat and throw out the bones. Sure, there's bones in Judaism, but there's bones in Christianity as well. And it sent me on a journey where I learned how to study according to the Jewish mindset, and it really opened up the scriptures for me.
Well, that's very interesting. Could you kind of outline more about what you just said on how you began to understand how to study the Jewish scriptures in the Jewish way?
Yes, I'd love to. The way they look at things, in the Greek mindset, we always look at things linearly, so to speak, like a checklist. But in Jewish mindset, things happen repeatedly over and over and over, and I started looking for patterns. And then I started seeing how in Hebrew, what's fascinating is every letter is a number. Every letter's a word. And so, for example, I saw the word Zion, Now, Zion, we know, is another name for Jerusalem. But in Hebrew, since I already knew every letter was also a word and a picture, the very word Zion, the first letter is a fish hook, and the last letter is a fish. And the Lord said he wanted to make us fishers of men. And then what's the bait on the hook to catch the fish? If you remember, Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I'll catch all men. And the middle two letters of Zion are the Yud and the Vav, or a hand and a nail. So the nailed hand of the Messiah is the bait on the hook to catch the fish. Now, the Jews aren't going to see that. But as a Christian, when I looked at the word Zion and I saw a fish hook, a hand, a nail, and a fish, as how David wrote that word, it blew me away.
It blows me away now. And we get very, very little of this teaching, even though within evangelical circles and certainly charismatic circles, there's a great love for Israel, but a lot of times it's kind of, at least in my opinion, kind of a sentimental love, you know, rather than really helping us to delve into the scriptures more and learn. So your ministry obviously helps people to do this. You teach this on Sunday, you teach it on the internet, and you've also written some books now. So why don't we talk about this book, Decoding the Antichrist and End Times? Describe to me and my listeners exactly what the book says in terms of how do we decode the Antichrist and the end times.
Sure. A lot of people, especially over the last 2,000 years, have been trying to figure out who the Antichrist is. And the way I look at it is instead of trying to figure out who it is, because usually everybody's wrong, we need to profile the Antichrist and the Antichrist system so we have a better idea of what to look for. And for me, it is legalized lawlessness. We see that in the book of Esther. In Ecclesiastes, God said, there's nothing new under the sun. That which has happened is that which will happen again. So as I look at the Old Testament, I look at history, and then I look at the patterns and see, wow, it's being repeated. In Haman's day, in the book of Esther, Haman was a type of Antichrist. He wanted to annihilate all the Jewish people, and yet he wanted to do everything legally. He had to create a law to make it okay to commit genocide. You know, they wanted to create a law to seize all of Vashti's property. They want to make a law that's legal to drink all you want. They had to make a law for women. So to me, when I look at it, even today, we decide if we just legalize abortion, if we legalize drugs, if we legalize gay marriage, if we legalize prostitution, that will make it okay. I even know Christians, teenagers, who thinks abortion's okay because it's legal.
Wow. That just shows you how far things have slid. But that's very, very interesting insight. In fact, Charisma Magazine ran an article last month in which you talk about Solomon. Could you unpack that a little bit?
Sure. Well, see, everyone's looking for a Solomon-type figure to solve the problems in the Middle East and make peace. But Solomon, I believe, profiles more like the Antichrist. He was lawless. He was narcissistic. Everything that God said the king was not to do, Solomon did. He multiplied wives. He married foreign wives. He multiplied silver and gold. He multiplied horses. He was even an arms merchant. He would buy what would be the modern-day tank, horses, and chariots from Egypt and sell them to the enemy, the Hittites. I can't imagine Netanyahu selling uranium to Iran. But that's basically what he was doing, and he made covenants with all the nations by marrying the daughters of the leaders, totally going against God. So it's just amazing to me how people see him. Yes, he was wise, but he perverted his wisdom.
That's right. And it's a very interesting insight, what you're saying about the Antichrist, because we think of it as a person. You know, there have been a number of movies made on this, and, you know, they try to sort of literalistically find a person, usually a white male, who could be the Antichrist and fulfill all the scriptures and the book of Revelation and so forth. But you're talking about more of it. It's a system. And over the years, I mean, all kinds of people and religions have been called the Antichrist. And while I haven't researched this recently, and I may be saying it wrong, but it seems to me that there were certain people that thought that Mussolini was the Antichrist. I've heard it said that the Antichrist would be a Muslim, you know, that will somehow subject the Jews in Jerusalem. I heard one time they said it was going to be a gay person, you know, having to do with immorality and so forth. But everybody's got a theory. And I think that it confuses people on one hand. And on the other hand, a lot of people just turn a deaf ear to it. Even church-going, Bible-reading Christians just turn a deaf ear to it. And then on the other hand, there are some people that almost seemed obsessed by it, in that that's all they can think about or talk about or go to conferences or read books about. What are your thoughts about that?
I think you're totally right. What was interesting, I have a friend who was Muslim for over 50 years, and then the Lord appeared to him on his deathbed, and he got radically saved. And I was asking him the other day if he thought the church was asleep. And he said, no, the church isn't asleep. It's in a coma. And I about cried. Yeah, it seems so. But for me, I think when you look at the New Testament, the Apostle John declared that there were many antichrists at his time. But what was interesting, he said they came out from among us. It's like it's a type of a professing Christian. And he says also, Paul says, that Satan comes as an angel of light. His ministers are ministers of righteousness. Hey, the devil already has the lost. He's already got the Muslims. He's already got, you know, all the pagans. He wants to come across as a believer, I believe, which will be very deceptive.
You know, that is an interesting thought. Can you elaborate a little bit more? I mean, how can we be discerning, or is everyone just going to be deceived and accept this hook, line, and sinker?
Well, it says the wise will understand and turn many to righteousness in the book of Daniel. I think the key is we have to know his modus operandi. I think he's going to have very flowery language. I think he's going to be like Solomon. He will be wealthy. He will be famous. He will be powerful. But when you look at people's, especially the millennials right now, and even many of us adults, we are attached to our iPhone, I mean, at the hip. Our technology is overwhelming us. I mean, people are willing to put computer chips inside their head now so they can be smarter. You hear about these parents who try to cheat to get their kids into college. Parents will do anything for their kids. And I almost wonder how many parents, I think they're going to run for the mark of the beast. They're going to want it because it's going to be so tempting. It's not going to be some ugly thing. It's going to be something that's going to allow you to, with your thoughts, access the internet. And so I think people are going to be deceived because they're going to be passionate about the things of this world.
Well, you know, your book goes into this having to do with artificial intelligence, even posing the question, is artificial intelligence antichrist possible? And you may be onto something. And, you know, just kind of a silly example, today I was with a friend and there was something we were going to look up on the internet. And so I was going to say, okay, Google. And I said to him, well, I know if I say, okay, Google, the Google across the room is going to pick it up. And my phone picked up and was trying to tell me what I was saying or something. I thought, you know, I need to turn this stuff off. I don't really use it very much, but I guess it's on in the room and we sometimes listen to music on it. But we're just getting the tip of the iceberg with artificial intelligence. I mean, artificial intelligence in a way helps us with our GPSs and directions. You know, to me at least, that's harmless. But you're right, they're talking about chips being implanted in people. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I was with a group of young people recently, and I said, you know, when I was your age, the personal computer had not been invented. And fast forward, the internet and cell phones and everything else. And I said, in your lifetime, you're probably going to talk to some young people and say, when I was your age, you know, we didn't have this, 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 and this. Things that we can't imagine, because when I was in college, I could not, and I'm sure my peers could not, have possibly envisioned the internet or the kind of cell phones that we take for granted nowadays. And so we're just at the tip of the iceberg. So what should Christians do? What should be our attitude about all of these things?
You know what's funny? Talk about age. Remember Dick Tracy? I thought I couldn't believe that someone would have a watch that's a phone, you know, going way back. But what's amazing, here's what we need to realize. I like to see way ahead, not just, even when I'm driving, I want to be real high. I want to be able to see what's coming. I don't like having a big truck in front of me. And when it comes to this artificial intelligence, Steve, what is really creepy is, you know, the driverless cars, they have cars now that'll drive for you because of all the GPS and all this kind of thing. They're creating the computer that's driving your car. They're giving it a moral artificial intelligence. Because if you're in the back seat and that car is driving and a deer runs in front of your car, the computer has to know, do I hit the deer? Do I swerve and hit the two pedestrians? Or do I take the driver down the cliff? And so they're creating a moral intelligence for these computer systems. And who wants to have an artificial intelligence that says a border on the southern part of the United States is immoral, but infanticide is moral? And I carry this a step further. The Siri and AI that people have in their homes that they talk to, like you said, they're always listening because they want to hear the command. And I have articles, and they're posted on my website, where they've created this moral AI where, as they're listening, if they hear a parent say something like, I'm going to go and spank you if you don't go to bed, the Siri will call 911. The police will arrive at your door. And so this moral AI is right into your home listening.
It is scary. In fact, I just unplugged Siri so that I don't have to worry about that. I mean, I literally just unplugged it while we're talking. But, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, I like being able to talk to my cell phone when I'm driving down the road and say, you know, find me directions to so-and-so, because then, of course, I don't have to text to do it, or to be able to dictate a text message to my wife telling her what time I'm going to get home. But you're right. These things have to be listening all the time to be able to recognize that. And, you know, right now, they're not calling the police, or at least I assume they're not. I haven't heard any reports of it. I mean, you said that a minute ago, but I think that you're speculating, aren't you? We haven't actually gone that far down the road yet.
Well, the article said that the potential is there for them to do that with what they're creating.
You're right, or that you're at home complaining about some left-wing politician
that's
in power, and they come knocking on your door, and they have proof positive because they have a record of everything that you're doing. And just today, I got an email from Google giving me a report on everywhere I'd been that month.
Isn't
that freaky? I didn't know they did that. And they listed a restaurant that I'd gone to and a couple other places. I didn't go anywhere I shouldn't, obviously. And it said I was only in the car for an hour, so that can't be right. But I actually put it aside and thought, I'm going to look into this, because I had never gotten it before. It was some kind of promotion from Google, I guess, on, you know, isn't this a great service that we're giving you? I mean, like, I really need, the only reason I'd need to know where I was going is if I was going to be counting business miles.
Right. They say we used to search Google. Now Google searches us. And that's the trick. They want to give us everything for free, and then they monitor our whole life, and then all the ads, they can make a ton of money off the advertisers because they can be more specific in targeting you.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I'm in business, and there are ways that we like targeting. If somebody goes to First Assembly of God, I know that they are a likely reader of Charisma.
Right.
You know, if they're a known member of the American Atheist Association or whatever it's called, I probably don't need to send them a promotion.
How much mail do we throw away when we get our mail and we go through it? Half of it goes in the trash.
You're right. And, you know, of course, I've been in this business a long time, and we had direct mail, you know, long before the internet. And it was like, if you subscribed to Better Homes and Gardens, they knew that you were probably interested in household things, and other people that sold that kind of thing would send you direct mail. But now it's so much more focused, and they're even saying that when you walk into a store, it knows that you're there, it knows you're on a certain aisle, and it'll send you ads on how you can buy the same thing cheaper somewhere else, or something like that.
It's just
almost mind-boggling. Now, I don't find moral problem with that. It's just that the same technology that allows them to do that stuff allows them to do things that really might tie into the Antichrist.
Sure. Even McDonald's just spent like $500 million on buying an AI company. And what they're doing on the drive-thru, when you pull into the drive-thru, it reads your license plate, knows who you are, know what you've ordered in the past, and the screen with the food will alter and change based on your buying habits.
Wow. Wow. It's just incredible. So, you know, a lot of us Christians have decided, boy, if they tell us to put 666 in our forehead, you know, we're going to die for Christ rather than give in. But it's not going to be that simple.
It's not going to be that blatant.
So what do we do?
It's going to be deceptive, very deceptive.
And so what happens if we are deceived and we're sincere followers of Jesus, but we're deceived? What's going to happen?
Well, I do believe in Revelation that talks about there will be beings or angels telling everyone, warning them not to take the mark, almost as if there will be some kind of a warning from heaven.
Well, that's reassuring. Of course, we're speculating, and I had a conversation with a friend recently about this very thing, and we were talking about the end times, and I was admitting that I really, you know, I've heard, you know, when you're my business, it's been my business to, you know, report on what different ministries say and publish books like yours and people like John Hagee and others, Perry Stone, who have real insight into these things. But I'm a little bit philosophical about it because when Jesus came the first time, we understand from the New Testament that he fulfilled all the prophecies. But at the time, the people that were looking for Jesus to come, that were interpreting scriptures, did not identify him. They didn't. You know, the religious people of the day. And I believe that when Jesus comes the second time, that he will fulfill all the prophecies, but it may not be fulfilling them the way that we are expecting them to be fulfilled, if that makes any sense. And
totally.
Some of these things, we just have to believe in God's hands. Of course, there are things that are bigger than we can understand. But on the other hand, there's a sincere desire on the part of many Christians, and certainly me, to try to understand, to try to discern the times. That's why we publish books such as yours to help people sort all this out.
Yeah, well, thank you. The thing that I think is the problem is we become too narrowly focused, thinking there's only one answer and we have the answer. Because what happened in Messiah's day, they knew it was messianic times, but they were arguing. He's supposed to be come out of Egypt. No, no, no. He's supposed to be born in Bethlehem. No, no, no. He's called a Nazarene. Little did they know they were all right, but they were only seeing in part. And so we need
and
to get the bigger
true
picture.
That's true of most of us. We all see in part. Well, I believe that God has raised up ministries such as yours to help us to understand. And I just so appreciate you and your ministry. And I'll just say it again. I so appreciate the I sincerely feel honored to be able to publish your book. It just is not a business agreement to me. And I'm just so encouraged that the book really seems to be taking off. People are talking about it. They're sharing it with their friends. They're recommending it. What kind of feedback are you getting?
I'm getting really good feedback as well. And we've had some people buying 10, 12 books and giving them away. It's crazy. But to me, people want to know the truth. I really stir the pot up, you know, because I think that's what we need to do. We need to take a fresh look at these things if we're going to be prepared for what's coming.
And I'll just remind the listener of the name of the book. It's called Decoding the Antichrist and the End Times, What the Bible Says and What the Future Holds by Pastor Mark Biltz. So thank you for taking a few minutes to go in depth about your background and about how the Lord has opened your eyes to these things and about how you're ministering to so many people. And
thank you. I just appreciate you, Steve, and I appreciate Charisma. I was so blessed to be able to, Debbie Marie was incredible. She just kept pounding me, and, how could I turn her down?
Thank you. I'll pass that along.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed my interview, and I promised that I would tell you how you can get a free copy of Mark Bilt's book, Decoding the Antichrist in the End Times. The way is just to subscribe to Charisma Magazine. Now, most of my listeners would know that for the last 43 years, I've been publishing the magazine about spirit-led living, Charisma. I hope you get it in your home. And even if you are a subscriber, you can take advantage of this special offer, which is subscribe to Charisma for $20, and you will get the free book by Mark Biltz, Decoding the Antichrist in the End Times. What a deal! All you have to do is go to our website. It's fairly easy to remember. You may want to write it down. The good thing about a podcast is you can back it up and listen to it again if you need to. Go to charismamag.com/decoding. Now, Charisma Mag is a short way of saying Charisma Magazine. So it's charismamag.com/decoding. Just the first word in Decoding the Antichrist in the End Times. When you go to the page, there's actually an option. If you'd rather have 2 years for $30, you also get the book for free. So this is a special offer for a subscription of Charisma Magazine, which I hope that you want in your home anyway. And also in the podcast, we did talk about how Charisma recently did an article about how Solomon was actually kind of a prototype of the Antichrist. It's actually a part of the book that you'll want to read. So again, let me repeat the offer. If you subscribe to Charisma for $20, you can get a free copy of Decoding the Antichrist in the End Times as our thank you. And when you go to the website, which is charismamag.com/decoding, there'll be a pull-down menu. And if you'd rather have 2 years for $30 and also the free book, you can pick that option as well. And remember, if you already subscribe to Charisma Magazine, thank you, by the way. We will just add this to the end of your subscription whenever it would normally end. Thank you for listening to In Depth with Stephen Strang. Until next time, God bless you.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.